There was once a great American named George Henderson. He met a woodland ape, or Sasquatch, and despite its dangerous message of environmentalism, became his friend. But when the time came to do the hard thing and send it back into the forest where it belonged, and birds could perch on its shoulder because it was gentle, George Henderson summoned the strength, and by God, he did it. Did it hurt? You bet it hurt. Like a bastard. But he did it because it was the right thing to do. For the woodland ape. You think about that.
What?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Is that Harry and the Hendersons?
You've seen it.
This is my life, Jack.
And then the other thing that stood out to me from the Yowie stuff was this sort of idea of people encounter these creatures and they have like an overwhelming sense of terror. So I'm going to couple that. I want to tie that into just a sort of you've investigated a lot of these cases, and I've sort of championed the idea with a lot of other people. I'm certainly not the first one to pick this up. Championed sort of the concept of when you're dealing with someone talking about their UFO encounter, you want to find out really how it affected them. So I guess I want to couch this all together because you've investigated these Bigfoot sightings. How do the people who see the Bigfoot react to the whole thing? What happens to them?
From what I've noticed, a lot of people have life-changing experiences, whether it's positive or negative. Some cases, I've talked to hunters and outdoorsmen or just common people who don't spend a lot of time outdoors that refuse to go back outdoors because they can't comprehend in their mind what they saw. It was too terrifying. It was something that they've never experienced before, never seen, and all of a sudden it's put right in front of them, and their mind can't wrap itself around what they experienced. And they kind of have that denial. They don't want to go back out there and experience it again. Then on the other side, there are people that see this and think, what the heck did I just see? I want to know what I saw. I want to know more about this. I want to know everything I can. And they become obsessed. And they spend the rest of their lives looking for answers, looking for the creature to not only validate what they saw, but to try to learn more about it and understand the creature and what it is and why it did what it did in their sighting or how it acts. So I've seen both sides of the coin. Some people just are in absolute denial of the whole thing and just won't talk about it. I mean, it's almost like it's mentally scarred them, and they just won't open up and share any details about it.
My goodness. Are you, as someone who spent so much time looking at this, are you happy or disappointed that you haven't actually seen the Bigfoot? Because I haven't had any real encounters with anything supernatural, and I kind of waver back and forth myself about it, where sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish that would happen. The other part of me is like, I'm kind of glad it hasn't. But how about for you? How do you feel about all that?
Some days I'm glad that we haven't discovered a Bigfoot, and some days I'm frustrated.
So I mean you personally, like as someone who spent so much time talking to witnesses and stuff like that, do you feel like, oh, I wish I could just see it even once, just so...
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I'd like that validation for myself to know that my last 33 years of looking into the subject has been worth something. But in the same sense, even if we don't find it, it's been such an amazing journey the last 3 decades, looking at the research and studying others' work and getting out there and investigating the cases myself and getting to experience the outdoors. It's one thing I always take with me is, even though I'm out in the woods and I'm not experiencing Bigfoot, I'm out in the woods experiencing Mother Nature and wildlife and the outdoors, and that's someplace I always love to be. So it's got its good points and it's got its bad points. I love the validation because I'd love to be able to tell the skeptics and scoptics, hey, look, this is real, and the work that I've done trying to prove this hasn't been in vain. I'm not crazy.
I think you're going to fall on the right side of history, man. You know, I really do. I'm a believer in Bigfoot, as crazy as that sounds to some people, but I find it hard to believe that it isn't real. But again, I go back to the idea that there's sort of this tulpa idea. Who knows? Maybe it's some conjuring from the mind, but even then it's still it still all comes together in a sense. You know what I mean? Where it's, okay, well, then these people who reported their Bigfoot sightings, they weren't full of malarkey. They weren't lying. They weren't hoaxing you. They projected it from their mind. Isn't that awesome?
That'd be pretty neat.
Rhetorical,
yeah.
Sort of. Yeah.
I think that'd be really interesting if that's what it turned out to be, that, you know, people, for whatever reason, have that ability to project a creature or to witness some kind of creature based on what they're projecting from their mind. That'd be fascinating. And I would want to study those people to find out why they're doing it and how they're doing it and try to replicate it if it's possible. I'm convinced that people are seeing something.
Mm.
I used to be very – I wouldn't call myself a believer, but I used to be very close to 100% that Bigfoot was real. And you know, there was no doubt people were experiencing it. They were having encounters, sightings, footprints found. I can't say that Bigfoot is real, but I can say I'm convinced that people are seeing something out there in the forest, and I want to find out what it is.
Now, your group, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, you stress right there on the front page that you guys are a no-kill organization. So obviously I don't need to ask you what your stance is on the kill or no-kill debate, but I guess what's your beyond, you know, your stake in that debate, what do you think of the argument in general? Is it a valid argument, or do you think that we really don't need to kill this thing if we're going to prove that it's real?
I've heard for decades that science needs a body, and I tend to agree with that to a certain point. As I mentioned earlier, I think DNA would be able to solve this mystery, and we don't need a full specimen. We might be able to get blood and tissue samples either through a tranquilizer dart or maybe a DNA dart, something to that effect, that we can, you know, prove that this animal is real and then study it further with, you know, the scientific teams and going out there to find out exactly what this animal is. I'm not a proponent, as our website says, of killing one of these things. I don't think we need to harvest one of these things. However, if a hunter, let's say Justin Smeha, hypothetically did shoot and kill a Bigfoot, that would solve the mystery right there, especially if the proper authorities were brought in, they were able to do the testing they needed to do, and to resolve this mystery. I think that would help. Or if one got hit, as Lauren Coleman likes to say, he believes that one's going to get hit by a logging truck and the mystery will be solved.
Exactly.
You know, if that happened, I'd be okay with that. But I personally don't go out trying to hunt one of these things down. And as funny as this may seem, if Bigfoot is real and they're out there, who's to say that there aren't two or three lurking around the area and I happen to shoot mom?
Yeah, exactly.
I may not make it back to my car in one piece.
Well, it's a very nuanced argument, like you got across there. I mean, I agree. People shouldn't go out and hunt the Bigfoot. That seems counterproductive in a big way and dangerous, because I think somebody got shot in the last year as a result of being mistaken for a Bigfoot. So it's not a good idea. But I guess part of me, well, I guess clarify a little bit or talk more about how you think the DNA would solve all this in a sense, or would prove the existence, because part of me, I feel like I don't understand DNA well enough to get on board with that. Do you know what I mean?
Right, and to be honest with you, I don't understand it that well either. I'm not a geneticist or a genetics expert. I can't do a DNA test to save my life if I had to. But I know that it does show different genes and chemicals and things in it that can match with common animals or humans, and you can derive a lot from the DNA. You know, you can tell if it's a primate or if it's more of a Homo sapiens species.
Okay.
You know, I think if DNA was collected and a good sample was able to be collected and they could run several tests and show that it is a species that we don't have, providing it's done by a credible researcher in a credible lab, and that information is put out there. Like Brian Sykes, for example, if he came forward with the samples he had and said, we have an unknown species here, then I think the scientific community would say, okay, well, let's start to look into this a little further and find out what it is. So you know, that's one proponent why I don't, you know, recommend killing one or bringing a body in. I think if there's that push for the scientific community to start getting involved, spending the money, putting the people in the field that need to be in the field rather than just amateurs, I think we may get a little bit further than we are today.
Now, I thought, kind of in line with the dermal ridges thing, wasn't the whole Bigfoot DNA thing unknown hominid? I thought they did DNA testing on Bigfoot stuff a while ago. Is it just, am I mistaken, or was it, did it fall apart, or what happened? Because I could have sworn there had been some ongoing DNA tests. I could have sworn this has happened several times.
It has, and there have been supposed hair samples that have been collected and turned in that come back as an unknown animal, not able to match with anything. And it's unfortunately not enough for the scientific community to say, okay, this hair that we had, it doesn't match anything, so we should be out there looking. It just wasn't enough for them at that time to really get behind it. Now, with the advancements in DNA, I think they're able to get a lot more from samples that are collected. But again, I'm not an expert in DNA. I can't, you know, cite specific reasons why they, you know, they do that now versus then. But I do know that there were claims back in the late 80s, early 90s, when DNA was first starting to come into its own, and they were able to do microscopic tests with the hair to match it. You know, they weren't able to match it with certain animals or known animals. There's a gentleman by the name of Dr. Henner Fehrenbach, and he was out of the Oregon Primate Institute, and unfortunately he's retired now. He's been retired for years, but he claimed that he had 12 hair samples that he called the gold standard of Sasquatch hair, and he felt they were legitimate hair samples from Sasquatch. But he could never get his colleagues or the rest of the scientific community on board to do anything with them, which I thought was kind of discouraging, but you know, that's what happened. So I think now that it's more popular and a little more accepted in the public eye, and there's a little more attention drawn to it, we're starting to see scientists slowly creep their way into this. I mean, think about this. In the 1960s and 70s, we had Dr. Grover Krantz, and that's pretty much it. Now we have Dr. Jeff Meldrum, we have Esteban Sarmiento, Todd Disattel, Natalia Reagan, Dr. John Bindernagel, more and more scientists, Dr. John Myanzinski, for example, they're starting to look at this. They're starting to take it a little more seriously. So if something like Dr. Sykes, for example, if he put out something that said, we have an unknown species, you may find more scientists jumping on board trying to figure out what's going on than we did 10 or 20 years ago.
That's what we need, because if we had people who understand animals a little better, maybe they would come up with something that we don't know yet. Do you know what I mean?
If, right.
They have a background in zoology. They may have some insight into all this. Now, Digger Dog in the chat has an interesting question that I've also pondered for a while. He thinks there may be an effort to conceal the existence of Bigfoot, whether it be by the government or who knows. So what do you think of that? I'm sure it's percolated in the community for a while, I'm sure. And you know, everyone loves a good conspiracy. What's your take on the idea that maybe the powers that be don't want us to know that Bigfoot's real?
Well, it's a possibility. And that's like the theories about what Bigfoot is. There are theories that the government's trying to cover it up, or certain agencies are trying to cover it up. The Fish and Game Commissions, the Forestry Division, they all know Bigfoot's real, but they don't want the public to know whether it's to protect the forestry industry from logging, or like with the spotted owl out in the Pacific Northwest, they wanted to protect its habitat. So you know, they closed off areas of land and kept them specifically for that that purpose. There's a lot of theories whether or not the government's involved. Some people say, yes, there's a deliberate cover-up going on. They've known about it for years. The Army Corps of Engineers out in Washington State had a manual that showed a Bigfoot actually in their field guide. And they talked about, you know, they called it the Sasquatch, of course, and they said this thing was real. So, I mean, maybe they do know what's going on. I personally have never met any government officer or government official that's come out to me and said, hey, yes, we're covering up Bigfoot. So I honestly don't know.
Right. I think I talked to Lauren about this, and he made the point about the Army or whatever, the CIA, the NSA, the folks who have the giant satellites that can read the newspaper or the you know, the serial number on a dollar bill. And he sort of, I don't know if he made the argument or if he had talked to somebody in that realm, but generally just that they don't pay any attention. It wouldn't cross their mind, the Bigfoot, because they're busy looking for Al-Qaeda or whatever. So it may be something like that, too, with a fish and game type dude. He may have run across Bigfoot a few times. He may not be covering it up, but he may just be like, there's no point in talking about it, you know? There's nothing I can do about it. It's just another animal. So.
Right. And that's possible. A question I get asked all the time is, with the advancements in technology, the ability for satellites to zoom in on a license plate, why haven't they found a Bigfoot? And that's an interesting question. I don't have the answer for, obviously, but you have to wonder these things. I mean, is the government capable of watching family clusters of these Bigfoot walk around and they've known about it for years? Why would they keep it from us? You know,
right.
It's like the UFO phenomenon. Why are they covering up the UFOs? I really don't know. I can tell you that I have had several people that have been in the military that have claimed that they were part, and one in particular came up to me at a conference and told me he was part of a secret division of the Navy that were fully aware that Sasquatch existed, and they would monitor them in certain areas in the Pacific Northwest. And they specifically did that when they wanted to do Navy exercises, launching rockets into this area. They wanted to make sure the creatures weren't in the area before they started doing their exercises. And I found that quite interesting, but no way to validate his claims. Try to ask him more questions, and he kind of skirt around the answers, and I can't talk about that. That's classified.
Right.
So,
right.
But I've had those kinds of situations where people have said those things to me, and I just kind of shake my head and nod, and it's interesting, and I leave it at that.
It's noble of them, at least, that they were looking to make sure that the Bigfoot weren't there before they did anything crazy. So that was nice of them. But to your point of, like, if they can spot the license plate, why can't they find Bigfoot? Probably because they just aren't even looking for Bigfoot.
Right, exactly. And
why would the NSA care what Bigfoot's doing?
Well, maybe they could use them as super soldiers. I don't know what their involvement would, why they would conceal them or why they would have any kind of involvement with hiding the Bigfoot species or keeping them from our knowledge. I really have never seen anything, like I said, myself to prove one way or the other. Now, I've talked to park rangers who are part of the Forestry Department or Wildlife and Game Commission. One in particular, I investigated a case in 2007 where a park ranger saw one of these creatures, and he watched it walk down an embankment on two legs, and he told me, I know it wasn't a bear. I watched this thing for several minutes, and I watched it pull branches into its mouth, strip the leaves off the branches. When it noticed me, it turned on two legs, walked down the embankment, walked off in the woods, and disappeared. And I found him to be very, very credible. But when I went to interview him again, he said, I really can't talk about this, and I'd appreciate it if you do not use my name or my title or where I have this sighting at, because I could get fired from my job.
Jesus.
So, I unfortunately couldn't give out, you know, the exact location and out of respect for him and his privacy. But it was an interesting situation. I mean, my superiors told me I could lose my job if I talk about this.
I wonder why, because they don't want people storming the area, probably.
It's possible. Maybe they don't want poachers in that area or to raise a panic in the park. I don't know. I really don't know. But it's fascinating to hear stories like that, and they do pop up from time to time.
Well, I've often pondered what the world would be like if we do get the Bigfoot. In a post-disclosure Bigfoot world, I think it would be kind of scary. There'd be a lot of people. I don't know. Actually, that's an interesting question. You think I think there would be a lot of people that would rush out to try and get their own Bigfoot. You know, if let's say somebody hit a Bigfoot with a car, next thing you know, there'd be a whole bunch of Justin Smejas and Rick Dyers out there with guns. you know, trying to go out and get a Bigfoot, which is a scary development. But I hope that wouldn't be the case. It'd be interesting to see. Let me pose it to you this way. Imagine a world where we nail the Bigfoot. What do you think happens? How do you think it goes down?
I really don't know. I would assume that if these animals were proven to exist, or creatures or humans or whatever they are, they would immediately fall under some kind of law of protection,
yeah.
Whether it be a known species, what do they call it, Endangered Species Act, protecting it or something to keep people from going out there and harvesting it. Because if you're right, if they were found to be real animals, they did truly exist, then you may have every crazy hunter out there or crazy person out there in the woods trying to bag one, and you may have people out there who want to see a Bigfoot, so they're going to go out there and look. The paths cross, and people may end up getting shot and killed. It may become chaotic.
Yeah.
So there might be laws put into place pretty quickly to protect them or to keep people away from them, you know, from observing them. I really don't know what would happen. I think it would be interesting to see what kind of course, you know, history would take, but at this point, I really don't know.
I think you pretty much nailed it, though. I think it would be a mix of people trying to go out and see it, people trying to go out and hunt it, and a lot of crazy people coming out with stories that they have had contact with Bigfoot. Have you ever looked into that kind of stuff? There are stories of people who say they have a psychic connection to Bigfoot, or there's a family of Bigfoot that live in their backyard, and they feed them, and they know them, and stuff like that. There's some pretty interesting and extreme stories of Bigfoot contact. What do you make of all that?
Oh, yeah, there are. There are those who claim habituation sites where they have gifting exchanges with Bigfoot. They give them peanut butter on a tree in exchange for feathers and branches and stuff like that.
Oh, God.
There's claims of people who have clusters of Bigfoot that live around their house and come to the house on a nightly basis to visit. There's a psychic connection where people claim they're communicating with Bigfoot telepathically, and the Bigfoot aren't here to hurt us but here to help us. I've heard a wide variety of claims and stories. I've never investigated a habituation case where I found anything to prove that a habituation case was going on. Some very close friends of mine in the field, some very well-respected people that I respect, are looking into habituation cases right now, and I haven't heard anything either pro or con, whether they're legitimate or not. But they do come up. I don't know if it's for attention or if it's legitimately going on. The couple cases that I've looked into over the years where families have claimed the Bigfoot would come around nightly, we've gone out, we've sat on the property with no results. We haven't heard anything. We haven't found tracks. We haven't had experiences or sightings. And then one case in particular, I'll share this with you. There was a gentleman, his first name was Brandon, and he lived here in southwestern Pennsylvania, a very urban area outside of Pittsburgh. And he claimed that this Bigfoot-like creature was coming around his house almost on a nightly basis. And it frightened him so bad that he wanted to protect his family. So being a former Army Ranger, he got out one of his high-powered rifles and started to patrol the property. And he would call us and say, this Bigfoot was just here. You guys got to get up here. So we'd rush up to his property, arrive just at dusk or at dark, and go patrol the property, go search and not find anything. We'd sit down on the property for hours and nothing would happen. We'd hear no sounds. We'd find no evidence of Bigfoot, but yet as soon as we left, he'd be on the phone calling us, guys, as soon as you pulled out of the driveway and got 15 minutes later, these things were coming back. And this went on for months.
Jeez.
And we found no evidence to support his claims. Unfortunately, you have to investigate those cases because he may be telling the truth. There might be just that one time that you're there that you hit the mother load.
Yeah.
And you find the proof among proof. But for our trips out there, the months we spent night after night, weekend after weekend, we walked away with wondering if he was maybe delusional or attention-seeking or if he was truly experiencing what he claimed. We never found any physical proof to back up his claims. And that happens, unfortunately, from time to time.
You sound like a very patient man, Eric.
I try to be.
Yeah. I think I would lose it after the second time that happened, or as soon as I was driving away and he called. I'd be like, yeah, man, all right, later. Don't bother me again. So you're a very patient man. Now we talked a little bit about the satellite thing. Another thing that kind of made the news a while ago was this. I'm terrible with names, but the guy who wanted to get the blimp to find the Bigfoot. Have you heard about that whole story? He was gonna devise some kind of blimp to do an overhead search, which is a good idea. But I don't know what's become of that. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, the Falcon Project is what it's called, and the gentleman's name escapes me at the moment, but he got together with Dr. Meldrum, and they were trying to fund this project. I believe they needed like $300,000 to put a dirigible blimp type of situation in the air that would basically float around silently and have the latest high-tech thermal equipment and high-resolution cameras, high-def cameras mounted on this blimp, and they would fly it around large sections or patches of woods looking for Bigfoot, where Bigfoot sightings supposedly happened, or, you know, hot spots, if you want to call them that. And they felt at that time they could get definitive proof that way, flying around different locations with the silent aircraft in the air, looking down on patches of forest, and they felt that they could be able to pinpoint where the creatures were, follow them back to wherever they were living or staying, and that would solve the mystery. But last I had heard, they had not reached their goal of $300,000, and they're still soliciting funds, whether private or public, to get this project off the ground, so to speak.
It's a good idea. I do like that. That's an interesting idea. What do you... all right, how about this? In an ideal world, right? Let's say you won the lottery. But Let's say some celebrity or something just gave you a bunch of money, and you had to use it, because there's the caveat that you have to use it to hunt the Bigfoot, or not hunt him, but you know what I mean, to search for Bigfoot. What's the best means to do this? You know, how would you go about going after the Bigfoot if you didn't have to work, or you had an indisposable amount of money?
I think what it's going to take to solve this mystery is for someone or a group of researchers, scientists, experts, to be in a location where there are reported sightings for an extended period of time with the right equipment to collect the data. Unfortunately, weekend warriors such as myself, and I'm not ashamed to call myself that because it's pretty much the time I can afford to it, a lot of amateur researchers don't have the time nor the money to do the proper research, nor do we have the training. But if, like you said, hypothetically, I hit the lottery and I had the money to be able to quit my 40-hour work week and to be able to spend an extended period of time in the woods with the latest equipment, the high-tech equipment to video, to audio record, to collect physical data, then I think maybe that would be the way to solve the mystery once and for all. But until that happens, I just don't see us getting any further.
What we need the people to do, the people behind the $10 million Bigfoot bounty, is just give us the $10 million, and then we'll give you the Bigfoot. It doesn't work the other way. Someone needs to explain that to them. It's like, listen, give us $10 million, we'll give you the Bigfoot, then you can get $100 million.
That's right. I'll give you the email of the producer of the show. You can contact them.
Yeah. I'll explain to him how basic paranormal math works.
I think it's a great idea. I know there have been supposedly over time investors who have gotten behind the Bigfoot phenomenon. Tom Slick is a perfect example, Texas millionaire that got behind the study over in for the Abominable Snowman in the 1950s, and Wally Hermsen, who's funding the BFRO, or was funding the BFRO, he was a multimillionaire that really got behind some researchers and provided them with equipment and to be able to go out and do it. I don't know if he's ever funded a long-term expedition to go looking for the creature, but that's what needs to be done. There needs to be a scientific team in the forest for an extended period of time with the right technology and right equipment to do the study.
I think so. Yeah, you need that extended period of time because that's when you're going to come across the whole thing. But again, we could be dealing with something that's way more intelligent than us. Lauren suggested that somehow a woman would be able to find the Bigfoot easier. I think it has to do with pheromones and stuff like that. It'll be interesting I guess you really wouldn't know how to go about doing that, but it's an interesting sort of idea.
Well, yeah, I would agree with Lauren. For some reason, and from what I've touched on through my research and learned a little bit about, it seems like the women, whether it be pheromone or whatever, they seem to be less threatening to the creatures, and the creatures are more prone to come around women, from what I've been told and researched and looked into. And if that's the case, you know, maybe we should have a team of female scientists out there in the bush looking rather than men. Maybe the creatures think that men are more aggressive and more dangerous than the female researcher would be. I've heard that from several people and from talking with even female witnesses who've claimed that they've been approached by a Bigfoot creature. And again, I don't know if it's the pheromones or hormones or what they're sensing, but it's a good possibility.
Now, you've investigated all these cases. What do you do when you take me through sort of your textbook case? You know, someone gives you a call. What do you do? Because I wouldn't even know where to begin on all that. So this is a good sort of primer for folks on what to look for in the event that they see something or experience something. Here's a real investigator, folks, who can tell us what we're supposed to be looking for. So, you know, what's your general sort of thumbnail investigation?
Well, what I try to do is if we get a website report, a phone call, an email, someone comes up to me face-to-face to report what they've seen, the first thing I want to do is write down everything that they tell me, document as much as possible, date, time, location, weather conditions, the experience itself, the environment that the sighting took place in, because that gives me a starting point to know, okay, well, they saw it in a desert. That's okay, they probably didn't see a Bigfoot. Versus they saw it in a thick forest. Okay, well, maybe they did see a Bigfoot. So there's a lot of questions I try to ask to the eyewitness to get as much information as I can. From that point, I can pretty much make a determination whether or not they saw Bigfoot or had a misidentification, or they feel they saw a Bigfoot, I should state. And if I feel that they believe they saw what they claim, then I'm going to look a little bit further into it. And time is of the essence. If you get a report 3 months from now, it's really not going to make any sense to go out in the forest and look for evidence, because chances are you're not going to find anything. But if they have a report this afternoon and you can get out there in the evening, you want to get out to that location as quickly as possible, because evidence might still be there to prove that they did see something. So I want to try to get the witness to take me to their sighting location and not just send me there, because I'm going to be walking around the woods wondering where the creature was seen.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So yeah. It helps to have the eyewitness take me right to where they saw the creature. And once I get there, I want to treat the area, as I call it, like it's a crime scene.
Right.
I want to be very careful as to where I walk, where I step. I want to try to search the ground for any tracks, any sign of something large moving through the brush, trampled ferns, broken branches. I want to look for definite signs of a large animal being in the area. And at the same time, I want to look for physical evidence, droppings, scat, hair samples, anything to really indicate that a large animal might have been there. And if I do find that, then I want to try to collect those specimens as best I can without contaminating them. In other words, using latex gloves, using sterilized either tweezers or containers, because if I get human contamination on that evidence and they try to go get DNA from it, chances are they're not going to be able to get DNA.
Yeah.
So you want to be very careful when you're collecting that evidence. Most of the time, I'd say 95% of the time, 98% of the time when I go investigate a case, we don't find any sign of evidence. Maybe we find sign that something big walked through the brush or something large was in the area, but we don't find the definitive footprint with the five toes in it. You can say, wow, there's a track. Or you find hair on a barbed wire fence or stuck on a tree that you can say, look, there's that could be Bigfoot hair. It very rarely happens. So time is of the essence to get out there in hopes that you can find that definitive evidence. And then once you do and you're able to collect those specimens, fortunately, I've built up a pretty decent network of scientists who are willing to look at some of the evidence, you know, and say, okay, we'll look at it under a microscope before we determine it needs DNA tested. And like Dr. Melder, for example, he works with us and my group to look at some of these hairs to say whether it is or not. Perfect example, in 2009, we found several strands of long, coarse hair on a broken pine tree. And we collected it with the latex gloves, with the sterile tweezers, put it into paper envelopes, and I personally handed him the two envelopes of hair that we had. He took it back to his lab in Idaho, did some microscopic testing on it, and he let me know that he did not believe it was Sasquatch hair. He didn't really tell me what they were, but he said these aren't Sasquatch hair. So, I mean, we were able to collect them and get them tested, and we had an answer. But unless you're able to get them collected correctly and you can contaminate them, it's a waste of time. So that's the general summary of how we do an investigation. We try to do it as thoroughly and as scientifically as we can, but as I mentioned earlier, we're amateurs. I have a background and a degree in communication with an emphasis on broadcasting, so I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
I'm not a biologist or a zoologist or a primatologist, but I rely heavily on those folks that are willing to help us, and I try to follow their lead and what they teach me as far as collecting specimens and samples for them to study.
Well, it's a very difficult thing, too, because I could walk through my neighbor's backyard and they would see me, but if you came in 4 hours later, there almost certainly wouldn't be any proof that I walked through their backyard, and I know I exist. So
right.
It's almost the same kind of challenge, because you don't know what kind – the ground is – you know, with tracks and stuff like that, you really got to rely on you're reliant on the state of the ground.
Exactly. So,
unless
exactly.
It just rained or something.
The perfect conditions for tracks to be found. You can find impressions in the ground. You can walk, like you said, you walk through a backyard and leave impressions in the ground with your boots or your shoes, and they look just like human-shaped impressions. But I can't tell you if that was a Bigfoot that did that or you did that, unless you see the tread of the shoe. In the print, all they are is impressions. So we don't know. And that's normally what happens if we do find tracks. They're impressions in the ground. And I make sure I let everybody know that up front. We found impressions. They could be human. They could be something else. We take measurements to make sure that, you know, they're within the human range. Sometimes they're very large impressions. I found 19-inch long impressions at a sighting location in 2009. Does that mean they were Bigfoot tracks? No, but they were very large impressions in the shape of a human foot. I can't say definitively they were Bigfoot tracks, but they were quite interesting.
I get driven crazy by skeptics. This is completely a different path, but I noticed you called them scoptics, which I like. I don't get why they have to hate on Bigfoot so much. If you don't believe in Bigfoot, then why don't you just leave people alone who were trying to figure it out? I don't get this. There seems to be an undercurrent, too, of the skeptic side, where it's They just want to rain on the parade, it seems, sometimes, which is unfortunate.
Well, I think it's good for everybody to be a little skeptical.
Right.
And I'm even skeptical myself. As I said, I don't know if these things really exist or not. And I think that keeps me honest. I don't take every claim out there, you know, every claim that somebody turns into me is Bigfoot. I want to look at it as objectively as I can. And you know, here you go. This is what I found. Yes or no, it was a Bigfoot or not, and usually it's not. So I understand where the skeptics are coming from, because they don't want to jump to conclusions. And if you believe everything you hear...
Oh, absolutely, yeah, yeah.
So,
no, I'm in favor of... Yeah, let me rephrase that. I'm in favor of skepticism
mm-hmm.
and being skeptical, but there's sort of this school of thought, this sort of like, I don't know, this sort of negative end of skepticism that's, like, as you said, you hit it right on with skeptics. It's like this sort of... belittling aspect of it that I don't care for.
Well, I'm sure you know Sharon Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I would consider her skeptical, but not a skeptic or not a scoptic. I mean, she's interested in the subject, and she just wants to see definitive proof. And I think if people have that attitude and take that attitude, I think we get a lot more accomplished. But the scoptics who completely bash the possibility or won't even take the time to look at some of the reports and to realize that there might be more to this than they understand or have even looked at, those are the people I think that do the most damage or really I don't know what thrill or what possible joy they get out of doing it, but as you said, why don't they just leave and leave us to do what we want to do, or, you know, to do the research that we try to do. But there is a difference between the skeptical and the skeptic, in my opinion, or the scoptic.
Right, right. That's the thing, and it ties then, it goes back to what we talked about at the very beginning, where it's these people who do the bad stuff, they fuel the skeptics, and then we're kind of stuck in the middle here, being like, listen, we don't believe these guys, so stop crapping on us in the media, because we're really trying to get a handle on this thing.
Right.
Very frustrating stuff.
It can be, yes, and being in it as long as I've had, I have been, it is, sometimes it's frustrating, especially when you got the Rick Dyers and the Justin Smejas who are making the claims with nothing to back them up, or very little to back them up, and then you've got the real diehard skeptics like Ben Radford, Michael Shermer, I believe his name is.
Right, yeah.
And those guys won't even, they won't look at the evidence. Everything to them is misunderstood, it's misidentified. There's no way a Bigfoot could be out there.
Right, exactly. I've called for sort of us to try to come together, but you can't really do it with those two groups. But it's like, instead of just closing your mind to it, take a look at it, and or offer us some suggestions on how we might be able to do it, instead of just outright saying, these things aren't real, you're wasting your time. It's like, how about saying, well, if these things are real, here's what you might want to try to do.
Yeah, and I mentioned Sharon Hill. That is a great example of what you should be doing. I mean, yes, she doesn't buy into every story, and she's very skeptical on a lot of things, but she's open-minded enough to at least look at the situation before she calls it something. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I like Sharon's work. She does good stuff. She's keeping an eye on the Bigfoot community, which is good.
Yeah, she does. She does. And I have a lot of respect for what she does and her look at the field. I think if the skeptics were to take a look at what she's doing, I think, you know, we might be able to bridge that gap a little more so than we are right now.
I hope so. We'll see what happens. Now, when we talked over the weekend setting this up, you said we could talk about other cryptids. Part of me is like, what other cryptids are there? There's the Bigfoot, and then they all I talked about this on an interview that hasn't aired yet, but it's sort of like Bigfoot's the big daddy of cryptozoology. It's kind of frightening in a way. I worry for cryptozoology if Bigfoot's ever proven to exist and it moves into zoology. I'm worried that cryptozoology may not be able to survive, or it'll fall into the realm of, you know, spontaneous human combustion or something where it's really fringe. But what other cryptids are out there that fascinate you?
I'm a big fan of the Mothman.
Okay.
I have been for a long, long time, and not so much for just the cryptic aspect of it, the cryptid aspect of it. I'm a fan of it for the various aspects that are involved in the Mothman phenomenon, especially from Point Pleasant, West Virginia, that took place in the late 60s. That wasn't just a strange flying cryptid that was seen. There were a lot of other aspects to it, and that makes that case to me just absolutely fascinating. You have the poltergeist activity going on around Point Pleasant, the huge amount of UFO and strange lights that were sighted in the skies. And it just blew me away of how many other strange things, the men in black were running around in Point Pleasant at that time. A lot of very odd phenomena were going on with that, the whole Mothman phenomenon, and from 66 to 67. And then all of a sudden, just as quick as it started, it quit. So that cryptid there has always fascinated me. There's such mystery and intrigue to that story. And I think if I were to retire from doing Bigfooting, that the Mothman would be something I'd really dive into to take a real hard look at.
Here's something. I asked some UFO researchers this at a conference I was at once. I've never posed this to a Bigfoot researcher, but we talked about a post-Bigfoot disclosure world. And beyond the world, what... You sort of intimated if you retire from Bigfoot research. I take it the only thing that would make you retire from Bigfoot research is the proving of Bigfoot. So what would you do if tomorrow they nailed the Bigfoot? Aside from, you know, being incredibly fascinated by it and being unable to be pulled away from the TV as they cover it and all that great stuff. I mean, where would you go from there into the Mothman stuff, or would you just retire fat and happy?
I think I'd want to know more about the Bigfoot phenomenon. I wouldn't just step away from it and be done with it. I'd be thrilled that they finally proved this animal or hominin or whatever it is existed, and I would want to know more. I would want to know if what the eyewitnesses were telling us about this creature is true. I'd want to know its habits, its behavior, its diet. I'd want to know why for centuries we haven't been able to find one of these things. You know, why is it capable of hiding itself so well from us, being so elusive? Is it truly as intelligent as most people speculate that it is? There's so many questions that I would want answered. And I'm trying to answer those now, but I would even more so want to know, okay, this thing is real. Where have you been for the past 200 years?
Yeah.
How have you been able to elude modern technology and those looking for it? What do you eat? Do you have social groups? Do you bury your dead?
Mm.
Are you truly psychic? Are you truly psychic and able to communicate telepathically? I'd want to know all these things, all these different theories people speculate about, if they're true or if they were just something that could be thrown to the wayside.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense, yeah. It would be a weird place to be, in a sense. The mystery would be gone, but there would be a million more questions.
Yeah, and I would be excited hopefully the day it comes that they are able to prove this thing is real, and it'll validate for all the eyewitnesses who have claimed they've seen it, the credible eyewitnesses. And there's so much more we can learn once these things are proven to exist. And I don't think I'd retire so much from wanting to know what it is than I would from trying to look for it.
Hmm.
Or maybe even I might want to get to the point where I want to go out and see one of these things in the forest myself, knowing that they're really, really out there. It might push my desire and motivation to really spend more time in the forest and really see one of these things at its natural habitat.
I could see that, actually. Yeah, now that you say that, I could see that totally, where it's like, okay, they proved the Bigfoot's real. Now I'm going all in on this. Let's really go after the Bigfoot, because now we know for sure it's out there. Yeah, I could totally see that.
Yeah, and I would, well, depending on what laws they pass, and you know, if we're forbidden to be in their habitat, it's an endangered species and you can't go near it, whatever, I would do as much as I possibly could to validate my questions and get answers for what I wanted to know. So it would remain to be seen what I could and couldn't do from that point forward. But I know I'd have the motivation and the desire to really want to learn more, that's for sure.
Now, I got this email here 10 minutes before the show started from a guy named Tony, and he had a question for you, so I feel like I should ask it. So I'll be fair to Tony, since he went out of his way to email me the question. He says, I've been interested in all things high strange for over 4 decades now and have read fairly widely on the topic. I am struck by the huge overlap in phenomena associated with Bigfoot sightings and poltergeist infestations. Loud crashes, screams, dropped or tossed stones, echolalia, I don't know what that is, but it sounds awesome, swearing, large and unusual bipedal footprints, glimpses of hairy, strange creatures with glowing eyes, truly rank odors, and deposits of unclaimed fecal matter. All of these occurrences are reported as being evidence of Bigfoot, as well as having taken place during poltergeist attacks. I'm wondering what Mr. Altman makes of this overlap.
Well, that's something that I've talked about with other researchers, that there possibly could be a tie-in or a connection with other paranormal phenomenon, like the UFO and Bigfoot that are reported to be seen together, even though the cases are small in number, they still have been reported. Is there a tie-in there? The poltergeist activity, as you mentioned, the rocks being thrown at us. I really don't know if there is a connection or not. I think it's fascinating, and I would love to be able to find some answers to that. I don't know if there's a tie-in or not, but we often speculate and we often chat, well, what if Bigfoot really is interdimensional and can do this or has these abilities that we don't know about yet or we can't relate to? And they often sometimes fall into the categories that fit those other paranormal things, such as the psychic phenomenon or the interdimensional phenomenon, or even dare say the poltergeist activity.
Hmm.
It's fascinating.
It's really strange. That's what makes the whole thing very strange. Now, there's someone very obnoxious in the chat room who wants to know if you think the Mothman was a fourth dimensional being. They keep saying, ask him. So I will ask you, do you think the Mothman was a fourth dimensional being?
I honestly don't know.
Thank you.
It really doesn't make sense why the thing showed up in November of 1966, was seen by over 100 people, and December of 1967, after the Silver Bridge collapsed, the sightings pretty much quit. I really don't know. I don't think anybody's ever seen the creature going in and out of a dimensional door.
Right, right.
And I honestly don't know much about the fourth dimension.
I was just going to say, we don't even know what the fourth dimension is. So
right.
How would
I mean,
we know if he's fourth dimensional? But I had to ask, so
right.
I did. I find the Mothman fascinating, but also way too perplexing to even get into in the 8 minutes we have left. So you're going to be back on the show in the future, and we can dig into the Mothman more
cool.
At that point. Tell me about... We'll get into some plugs here, because I want to know about some of your other stuff that's going on. Now, Mountain Devil, that's the film you were talking about earlier, right? The Search for Frank Peterson?
Right. That was a film that was released by Raw Footage Films this past November. The director and film crew and the producer, Ryan Cavallini, started going out with us in 2010, and he wanted to do not necessarily a Bigfoot documentary, but he wanted to do, because they've all been done, he wanted to do something where he could do a fictional film but kind of encompass a documentary film into the fictional movie. And what he ended up doing was the case of Frank Peterson, it really isn't a researcher who went missing. It's a look at a case of a gentleman who really, his name isn't Frank Peterson, that's a pseudonym.
Mm-hmm.
But this gentleman claimed that in the 1970s he and a buddy came across the Bigfoot that was harassing them at their hunting cabin, and they had multiple encounters with it. He thought it was a bear. He shot it and killed it, and they discovered it wasn't a bear, so they buried it at the hunting cabin. And he kept it very quiet and to himself all the way up to the point where he, on his deathbed, he finally admitted it. And he told a police officer he was friends with and some other folks, his family, and the story got out to our group, the PBS, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. And even though we tried to investigate it, we came up with a lot of dead ends. So we were never able to really get much from that case. But Ryan took that story and created a fictional character, Frank Peterson, and based the fictional part of that movie on his encounter and killing the creature. And he also wrapped around that story researchers who go into the woods to look for Bigfoot, thus, you know, myself and other researchers here in Pennsylvania. And he spent a lot of time with us in the forests and filmed us and was out on several investigations with us. And he actually went from being a skeptic to, well, there really could be something out there. He had an experience where he had rocks thrown at him in the forest while he was out filming one night.
Jesus.
And he found the large impressions in the ground that he can't discount, he can't explain. So he was very intrigued, and he actually ended up becoming a member of our group. And he goes out with us regularly on research investigations now. But
nice.
The film is about 90 minutes long, and it really takes a look, as he says, and I have to agree, it's not so much as a look at Bigfoot research, but the Bigfoot researchers and what we have to endure, what we deal with, looking at the cases, looking at the evidence we have to sort through and sift through, all wrapped around this fictional story of a gentleman who supposedly shot and killed a Bigfoot in a hunting cabin in the 1970s here in Pennsylvania.
Nice. Is there a website for that?
Yeah, you can order it off of legendhunters.org.
Nice.
That's his website. You can go and check out the film there. I believe he's selling it for about $20.
That's a good deal. Yeah, check it out,
yeah.
Folks. And then
yeah,
you've got also Beyond the Edge Radio. Tell me about the show here.
Yeah, that's a show I've been doing now for this is our seventh year.
Nice.
We started in late 2006. Or 2007, excuse me, and we've covered a lot of esoteric topics, much like your show does. We talked to a variety of different researchers who look into all facets of the strange and unknown, not just ghosts and UFOs and Bigfoot, but all different types of topics. So we would try to dwell into subjects that aren't covered by mainstream media, whether it be people that build props for Halloween haunted houses, or we had Midnight Syndicate, the Halloween musicians on the show. We take a look at the not so much normal, if you will, and we've been on the air.
Fringe.
Right, exactly. We call ourselves Alternative Talk Radio.
Nice.
And we've been on for about 7 years. Lon Strickler, who writes for Phantoms and Monsters, myself, Sean Forker, the three of us have been involved with the show one way or the other, and we've had a lot of great guests on. We could get you on the show with us sometime.
Hey, man, whenever you need a guest, I'd be happy to do it.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, I would love to do it. I'm a big Lon Strickler fan. Tell Lon I'm going to be in touch soon because I want to get him on the show, too. I love that Phantoms and Monsters stuff. And I heard his Bigfoot story. It's wild.
Yeah, his Sykesville Monster experience in Sykesville, Maryland.
It's pretty crazy. It's a wild story, folks. We'll get Lon on to tell that story. But where can folks can find out about Beyond the Edge Radio at beyondtheedgeradio.com. And when would that air, Sunday nights?
Yes, we're on the Para X Radio Network, and they can tune in Sunday nights between 8 and 10 p.m. Eastern Time. That's when we're live, and if they want to catch our podcast shows, any of the archive shows, they can go right to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com, and we have a list of the different podcast options for you to choose from, whether it be iTunes or Stitcher Radio or Podomatic or any of them. You can check that out.
Yeah, I've checked out the site. You got some awesome guests on there, so I'm very impressed.
Well,
I like
you.
People that are doing good shows and good radio, so I'm not.
We try.
Yeah. I'm always happy to share the wealth and spread the word, and you know, the more good shows that are out there, the better. So it's always
likewise.
Good.
Yeah, we try to do the same, and that's why when I said earlier it was a real honor to come on the show with you tonight, I was very honored that you asked me to be a part of your show. I really enjoy it.
Oh, thanks, man. I really appreciate that. We're as offbeat as it comes. We don't even have a set day of the week. We're guerrilla radio in the classic sense of the word, but we like what we do. Well, folks, we're going to say goodbye to the live audience in just a moment. I'll throw the plugs in here after that. Just don't hang up, Eric. And folks can find out more from Eric at beyondtheedgeradio.com, also pabigfootsociety.com, and ericaltman.net. I can't thank you enough, man. I just slammed you with a million Bigfoot questions, but I really do appreciate it. I really enjoyed the conversation and feel like I'm finally back up to speed in the world of Bigfoot. So thank you so much, man.
Oh, it was my pleasure and a real honor to be on tonight, Tim. Thanks for asking.
And thank you to all the folks out there who are tuning in live. You guys are awesome. Great showing in the chat room. And big thanks to all the folks once again in the chat room. Have a great night, my friends. Until next time, this is Tim Bernal signing off. There goes the live audience. Let me just throw in the plugs here. If you're just listening to this on Blog Talk Radio and you have no idea who I am or what you've been listening to the last 2 hours, this is BOA Audio. You can find out more about it at banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. We're also on Facebook. Just punch in Banal of America. You'll find our page there. Like us. You'll hear more about what's coming up on the program. What you just listened to was a free two-hour program. We put them out almost every week, and they're always free. So if you can help us out and help us get in the black on this program and not constantly in the red, that would be greatly appreciated. There's two ways to do that. You can head on over to banalofamerica.com, click the PayPal button. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, secure, and simple. But if you don't trust the internet and you want to make a P.O. Box donation, you can also do that. The address is at Banal of America, right next to the PayPal button. On the next edition of the program, Gian Kassar returns to BOA Audio to talk about his amazing new book, Scarlet Autumn, The Crimes and Seasons of Jack the Ripper. If you're a fan of hearing me go wild about a book, you're going to love this episode of the show. The book is amazing, and the interview is tremendous. You're going to learn a lot about Jack the Ripper on the next edition of the program. And hopefully that'll be coming at you Wednesday, Thursday, next week at some point. And with all that said, thank you very much, my friends, for tuning in. Thank you once again to Eric for coming on the show. Really loved the conversation. Just a fascinating 2 hours that flew by. I cannot believe it. And on that note, my friends, Until next time, this is Tim Bernal, thanking you for listening and signing off.